Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Reisner. Welcome to Cloud Cover. Today, I'm joined by, as always, Hashi Bai.
Hello.
And today, our special guest is, oh god, where'd he go? today we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do a bit of a Azure recap show. And so it's just Hashi and I and some Channel 9 guys, but we're kind of going to go over some stuff that's gone down with Azure over the past few months. Yep. Some of the stuff is actually relatively late breaking, so just within the past week or so. Mm-hmm. And then some of the stuff is maybe a little bit older, but stuff we haven't really talked about in very much detail on the show.
Yeah.
So this is more of a high level one. We're not going to get super deep into stuff, but we're going to talk about stuff at a, you know, at a higher level.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and kick things off. First thing we'll talk about is the Azure portal. Last week, the Azure portal went GA, so it's general availability. So no more preview portal. Now we've got the Azure portal. So if you go to, you know, if you go to what was the current portal, so the blue and white one, it'll pop up something that actually says, hey, the new Azure portal has launched. Would you like to go to it? So this is now the default portal, and a lot of what the GA release was about usability, performance, and reliability. So making sure everything is rock solid, it works well, it's predictable, and it's understandable. Mm-hmm. As part of the release, we announced a few things that are coming down the pipeline. Obviously, we're going to continue to work on performance improvements and make sure that continues to get better. There's a few services that are still primarily in the I guess we're calling it the old portal now? Are
yeah,
we done
I guess.
With that?
Legacy.
Yeah, portal. The legacy portal, sure. So there's still a few services that are in there and that you'll be pointed to if you try to go to them in the new portal. So we're going to keep moving that stuff over, so more and more services will be moved over. I don't think there's actually that many left that are only in the old portal, but you know that number is going to get smaller all the time.
Yeah.
And then one of the other things that was mentioned is that some people have some issues with the horizontal scrolling, and it can be quite, you know, extensive if you open up a lot of blades. And, you know, there are some things where you can go, you know, open a blade, 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 and it's just, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something that's going to be looked at and addressed. So really quickly, we'll hop over here and take a quick look at the portal. So if you haven't seen it before, you know, this is the current Azure portal. And we won't dive too much or walk too much around this stuff, but a lot of the capabilities and the changes here were about making navigation, or at least that's one of the biggest things I've noticed, is making navigation easier.
Yeah.
So you'll see search boxes in a lot of places. You know, if you go over to the recent, you'll see some of the recent services you've used. If you go to something such as, you know, maybe app services, a lot of these now will have, you'll be able to filter them. And then you can also, straight from when you're looking at a resource, you can add new examples of that resource.
Yeah.
And you know, what's really cool is, you know, I remember when we first brought this preview portal, now again, the actual portal out, you know, there was only a few things in here, but if we actually go to browse now, there is just, you know, there's a lot of stuff in here because we've just brought a lot of things into the Azure portal. And what's really cool, actually, I think about the browser is you actually see which one of these are previews, and you can star items as well to get kind of almost your favorites. And I think we'll actually talk about some of the things that are in preview as we go through the rest of the stuff.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to hand it over to Hashi.
All right, the next one we're going to cover is IoT Suite, which was announced back in September. So basically what it does is, because they say Microsoft, we actually will provide a whole spectrum solutions for your IoT solutions, from data ingress to data analysis, storage, presentation. We have the whole pipeline. And what IoT Suite does, it allows you to combine those things together into a meaningful solution. So for IoT solution to make sense, usually it needs to be tied to certain verticals, because different verticals, they use the IoT devices and the scenarios rather differently. What IoT Suite allows you is to discover or define or reuse prepackaged solutions so that you can easily bootstrap a new IoT scenario from the portal itself.
Can you give me an example of what?
Let me just show you in the browser. Let's see it live.
All right.
So here's the IoT Suite portal.
Great.
You can see here you can actually create from one of the pre-built solutions.
Okay.
So far we have two. We have a predictive maintenance and remote monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
But you can imagine in the future we have like more solutions to surface. And all you actually needed to do is to click on the select button and then launch the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It provisions everything for you, the data pipeline analysis presentation. It also creates the simulated devices. So you have like a complete solution you can play with right away. For instance, this is the remote monitoring solution I created. I didn't do any customization. That's out of box by default. That's all I got. I have a number of devices. I have different views of my device. I can monitoring the live telemetries on my devices, and I can define rules and actions, etc. So it's just a really nice way for you to kickstart your IoT solution on Azure.
Okay, and it looks like, if I'm correctly understanding, like this sample is basically temperature sensors that you've placed around the Seattle area, and it's giving you the temperature of those?
Yeah, and you can generate alarms based on a certain threshold.
Right.
And
so if it's ever between, you know, 40 degrees and 70 degrees, set enough alarm because it should never be that warm or that cold in Seattle, right?
Yeah, I guess that's the case.
All right.
And the next thing I want to mention is that we also have this Microsoft Certified IoT Partner Program. So if you want to be part of this program, you certainly check this out. I think we'll have all the links under the episode. So basically, this allows you to gain additional exposure, PR, through the Microsoft channels to show off that you are a certified IoT partner with us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great. Cool.
So what's next?
I think next we've got up the Azure Backup Server, which is kind of it's an interesting name because it's really not like a server, like you don't really run it necessarily. But essentially it's a free download you get with the Azure Backup Service, and essentially you run it in your own data center on-premise. It enables cloud backups of several different workloads, stuff like SQL Server, SharePoint, and Exchange. And basically it does a cloud backup of those services to Azure. And it works regardless of whether you're running those workloads in Hyper-V or on VMware or on physical servers. So whatever way, you know, however you're running them, it's going to back those up to the cloud just in case you ever have any issues. And then one of the big changes most recently is we added a bunch of languages besides just English. So I think English was, you know, prior to October, and then just recently, you know, there's like 20 other languages, stuff like that. So another really easy way for you to back up your on-premises resources into the cloud for safekeeping.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next one is kind of huge in terms of the Linux ecosystem. So we have
this is very big. People kept saying, when is Red Hat going to be on Azure? When is it going to happen?
Yeah, this has been like number one feedback items we have for a while. So now we have Red Hat on Azure, and the bulletin items you see here is from the link we will present at the bottom of this episode.
Sure.
This is still in the early phase, right? So I copied the text here because I want to say the correct things.
Okay.
I mean, I would imagine as we go along, some things may get solidified or some might change. I don't know. But this is what we're announcing in terms of Red Hat. So basically, we have native support for Red Hat on Azure. And we have integrated enterprise grade support, which means the Red Hat and the Microsoft will actually have the customer support co-located so that we can provide like the top rank customer support to Red Hat
and
customers.
And at the end of the day, if you go to, you know, the Microsoft support site or you file an issue with Red Hat on Azure, it's actually going to go to people. It's not just going to be like, sorry, it's Red Hat, we don't care.
Yeah.
Like, there's real support behind that.
Yeah. And also, not only we are supporting the Red Hat on Azure, we're also bringing the support into our on-premise solutions. I guess system centers and those things, you can manage the Red Hat, the virtual machines on your on-premise as well.
Great.
And also, there's a collaboration. Now we have the .NET Core that runs on Linux. So basically, the Red Hat is becoming one of the primary environment, we enabling .NET Core for the next generation of .NET-based application on Linux.
Great, very fun, exciting stuff. So next up is kind of an interesting one, and I didn't really know a lot about this before I did a little bit of research, but a little while back we announced something called Azure Blockchain as a Service. And I think we announced this in early November. And if you've heard of blockchain, you've probably heard about it in the context of Bitcoin, because kind of the underlying record book for Bitcoin transactions is what's called a blockchain. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of this really cool system where you can distribute this blockchain so that you've got guaranteed transactions and you can't counterfeit it. And it's this very reliable and secure trackable system. And essentially, we began offering blockchain as a service a little while back. And essentially, well, the slide doesn't actually tell you what it enables developers to do. But essentially, what you can do is you can build out systems that use that sort of reliable, decentralized, but guaranteed record model within your application. So for example, if you needed to build out your own cryptocurrency or currency transaction system or your own voting system, something like that that you needed to be, you know, absolutely reliable, this is an option for doing that. And the Azure Blockchain as a Service gives you a really easy one-click deployment of that. So it enables, you know, development scenarios against this sort of a system super, super easy compared to what you would have had to do before.
Cool.
And for this right now, we partner with Ethereum as well as Consensus. So you have some options there for how you deploy it. But a lot of really cool and interesting scenarios here, especially, like I said, you know, kind of related to banking, finance, and then, you know, voting is another good example of it. But a really interesting service, actually.
Yep. All right, PowerShell, this one will be quick. Basically, now PowerShell finally reached 1.0 as of December 23rd. And there are two things I want to mention. Basically, I want to highlight is the first one. Now you can use Resource Manager and the Service Management side by side. You don't need to switch mode anymore.
So no more setting which mode you want to use and not really knowing which mode you're in.
Yeah, so basically now they are separate commandlets that you... I think the Resource Manager command list isn't installed by default, but you can use additional command to pull down those commandlets. Then they have separate method signatures, but you can run both commandlets side by side. The second is that we now support certificate-based authentication now. So in addition to the tenant ID, client ID, and the secret, you can use a certificate for authentication. And in the link down below, we'll have a complete example of how to do that. So basically, you can just point to your certificate footprint, and you can use that certificate for authentication.
Great.
Yeah.
Super awesome. So this one's near and dear to my heart, but last week we announced the general availability of App Service mobile apps, as well as some updates to it. So essentially, mobile apps is kind of the next generation of mobile services, and we're going to do a video in the next month or so about this, but because, you know, this is the next generation of mobile services, as part of the GA, we're actually releasing a migration feature, and it's a one-click, zero downtime migration from mobile services and mobile apps.
Cool.
And that's possible as part of the GA because we've also added the Node backend. Node backend into mobile apps, so it's no longer C# only. It's also going to support that same Node backend that mobile service did, as well as stuff like Easy Tables and Easy APIs, which is kind of the same sort of functionality you had in mobile services where you could edit your table and API scripts right in the browser. You can do that again with Easy Tables. We also added easy authentication for both mobile apps and all of App Service, so kind of more of a shared authentication model between both web apps and mobile apps. You're kind of doing the same sort of stuff.
Yep.
And then also last week we released the Android Quick Start and SDK for mobile apps. So a lot of really cool features and updates to mobile apps, and now because it's GA, it's production approved. So if you've been, you know, on the fence about whether you should go from mobile services to mobile apps, it's you know, it's the right time to take a look, especially because of that migration wizard.
Okay, and now because the mobile apps and the web apps, right, they are all integrated under the same umbrella of App Services. You can see a lot of integration points between the two.
Exactly right. So now, like, if you create a mobile app, it's really essentially very much so a web app with some added, you know, easy functionality of the quick start's a little bit different in that you're creating a mobile app with the client and the server as well. But because the mobile app's more in line with the web apps now, you can still host web app content the same way you would have, you know, before or with a website or web app.
Cool. Yeah. So the next one was also big. It's the Service Fabric Preview. Basically, that's our new PaaS offering. I think there's already tons of videos and content on Channel 9, so definitely check those out. So basically, this is our new PaaS offering that allow you to build scalable distributed systems. We have a couple of PaaS offerings, right? We have web apps, which allows you to build websites. And we have cloud service, which is designed for you to build N-tiered applications, mm-hmm. like front-end, back-end, data tier. And Service Fabric is really designed for microservices architecture. So basically, you decompose your application as individual services, and you can scale, manage, evolve those services separately. And it provides two programming modes. You can write the reliable services yourself, or you can use a higher level abstraction, which is called the actor mode, where you can abstract your problem as a bunch of interactive actors. For instance, if you have an online game, right? Mm-hmm. Each player you can abstract as a player actor. Mm-hmm. And naturally, it has properties as score, health, or experience, those things. So the actor mode, it just make a lot of complex problems becomes manageable by using actors. Because the most complex system we see is our society, right? Sure. But the society is made up by individuals, by humans. We are actors in the society. So with the same thinking, you can model a lot of systems, especially those interactive systems with a lot of different individual agents. The Service Fabric make those kind of problems easier to be described.
It's very deep, actually. That's very deep.
Well, Service Fabric has been my one of my interesting points. So. I always want to talk more about it.
Great. Well, in the new year, we should actually do a show
yes,
on Service
definitely.
Fabric and talk about
yes.
it more in detail.
Yes. So although this service is just going into preview in November, but actually within Microsoft, we've been using Service Fabric internally for quite a few years now. And if I bring up some of the services, you may know, including Cortana and Link, and they are actually all built on top of the Service Fabric or Service Fabric concepts. So it's really a battle-proofed service, but we are now exposing the same high scalable service to you, so you can write similar applications.
Excellent. Very cool stuff.
Yeah.
So our next item up is we just recently announced a preview or an extension which enables you to use PHP 7 Release Candidate 7. So there's an extension that properly configures PHP 7 in the Fast CGI pipeline. So basically it gets it ready and working for you. And this can be deployed via the portal or via the command line interface. This is currently experimental, so it's not fully supported. It's not production approved. It is just a release candidate. But this will enable you to start playing around with it, build mm-hmm. your applications against it, see if there's going to be any issues. And some of the issues, or some of the support, so the stuff that PHP 7 is adding support for is stuff like null coalescing operators, mm-hmm. Combined comparison operators, 64-bit support,
yep.
and a lot of other really cool performance improvements.
Yeah.
So this is a really fun way to check things out and understand how your app will work with PHP 7 on yeah. Azure.
Yep.
If you want to know more about that, you can check out Corey Fowler's blog. He yep. Wrote about the extension, how to deploy it, and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, I guess the coolest part of this is that you can try out the greatest and the latest on Azure.
Absolutely. Yeah. In a very, very easy manner. I think there's actually an ARM template, which I know is ARM templates are near and dear to your heart, Hashi, that will actually deploy a web app for you and auto deploy that PHP 7 extension for you as well. So
cool.
Really easy way to kind of just slide right into playing with PHP 7.
Cool. What's next? Container service preview. Yes, this is also new. This announced December 2nd. So basically, this is a new service we're providing. It allows you to create a cluster of containers. And for this one, we actually adopted an open source strategy. Basically, the container service is using Mesos underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So this means all the Mesos tools and softwares, if you're familiar with, you can use those to manage your container service cluster. And all the frameworks the Mesos support, such as Marathon or Chrono, you can use on that cluster as well. And what's more interesting is that the cluster is built on top of our VM skill set, which we'll mention in a moment, which allows you to scale out and scale in your hosts, depend on the load of your cluster. And we are also working on to enable Mesos on Windows. That's actually one of the effort the DX team is heavily participated in. So there's definitely a lot to come in term of container support. Mm-hmm. So as part of our container strategy.
So it sounds like from what you're saying is we kind of went a similar path as what we did with Docker, where we took like the public utility, the tools that Docker has and made them work with Docker on Azure. And we did the same thing where we made the Mesos tools work with Mesos running in our containers as our container service.
Yeah, exactly right. So the way we embrace container or Docker overall is that we don't want to invent new things or new interfaces, new tools for you to use. Basically, we are adopting all the existing standard interfaces and tools. In terms of Docker container at the top, although we have Windows implementations of the Docker container, but at the top, you still view them as regular Docker containers. And same here, the container service is built on top of Azure, but from the top, you still use Mesos-based tools and services to manage it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So next one up is the Azure Redis Cache Premium tier. And we actually just did a full show on this recently, so we'll obviously link to that in the show notes. But just kind of talk about things. So essentially, this is the GA of the premium tier, as I should say that, so it's G8. But essentially, you deploy on hardware with faster processors, providing better performance than you would get with standard or basic. You get a higher throughput for the same size cache than you do on standard. So even though you've got the same size cache, you're getting better throughput there. This also enables data persistence with Azure Storage. So basic and standard tiers of Azure Redis Cache, they're just storing the data in memory. Mm-hmm. They're not writing anywhere, whereas this is actually writing it into Azure Storage as well. This also enables using Redis clusters. So if you're already using Redis clusters, you're familiar with it, this enables that. So now you can either store, you know, kind of split your data across the different clusters or your Azure Redis instances, or you can specify different patterns for how you want data sent to different instances of your Redis. And then this also enables the deployment in Azure VNet. So now you can lock that Redis cache behind your own VNet if you want to do that.
Yeah.
So really cool functionality added for the premium tier of Azure Redis cache.
Yep. So virtual machine skill set, as I just mentioned, basically it allows you to take a virtual machine image and stamp it out to thousands of instances. And you can manage the whole set as a complete unit. You can scale it out, scale it in, and you can also integrate with Azure Insight Auto Scale. Basically, you can set up telemetries on the virtual machines, and based on those values, you can scale out and scale in the skill set as needed. And what else? We provide a bunch of quick start templates, which I think we'll give you a link. So from the quick start templates, you can see the common scenarios where the skill set is used, and you can use that as a starting point to provision your own skill set on Azure. And remember, if you've been working on the ARM template before, if you want to provision a large number of virtual machines, originally you have to use this loop construct to loop through your template to compose those machines. But now you can just define a single VM skill set and you just specify a number. Say, I want 200 machines on this site. And Azure will just provision those 200 machines for you.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I think we did a show on this a while back too, which we'll link to. But I think at that point in time, we hadn't gone to public preview yet. So now we're there, and all those quick start templates are in the Azure repo on GitHub. Yeah. So it's all ready and available now.
Yeah.
So another thing we just announced a public preview of last week is the Azure Security Center. So this is something that's available in the Azure portal, and that's the new portal. Yeah. But essentially, this is a service which makes recommendations and alerts you to any issues that may be affecting the security of your cloud resources. So some of the things this is going to warn you about is, hey, make sure you're turning on log collection. You should be encrypting your databases. You want to make sure you enable the anti-malware on your virtual machines and a lot of other resources. And this also makes deployment of some Microsoft and partner security solutions a lot easier. So stuff like Barracuda, F5, Trend Micro, and then a bunch more coming soon. Mm-hmm. And I've got kind of a screenshot of what it looks like kind of for one of the subscriptions I have right now. And inside here, this is, you know, this is one of those things where if you go to that browse feature in the portal, it's going to say preview, because like I said, it's in preview. But here we've got, you know, I've got high severity issues on my virtual machines and my networking and my SQL. And again, that's because I haven't done anything to secure or make properly secure any of these things. Mm-hmm. So if you actually click on the recommendations here, it tells me. So I've got one subscription I should be enabling data collection on. I've got a bunch of SQL servers that I should enable auditing on. I've got the same thing with SQL databases. I should configure my ACLs for endpoints, and I should enable data collection on some other stuff. So this is going to kind of make sure, or at least make sure you know about any issues that might be affecting your VM. So really useful stuff that if you don't know about, you may not even think about.
Yeah. SDK 8. So this is a new version of SDK released in November. And just to highlight some of the items, the first, we have better ARM editing support. You have better IntelliSense. If you type in your ARM template, you get this live help of for you how to write the ARM template correctly. And we have the Docker preview tool with Windows container support. You can deploy to Azure. And we have a bunch of tools for different services. We have the Storage Explorer preview. We have the Service Fabric tools integrated in the SDK. And basically, you have not only the templates to create the Service Fabric projects, you also have a new local cluster manager, which has a much nicer interface to browse and monitor your applications and clusters. And we have additional tools like HD Insight and Data Factory tools available in this SDK.
And I think the announcement of that was most exciting to me was actually the Storage Explorer preview, because I use different operating systems, and to have that same Storage Explorer experience for Azure Storage on OS X and Windows and Linux, like it's fantastic. It's a really cool utility.
Yep.
So some document DB updates that we've had over the past few months. First of all, there was a document DB migration tool that was basically created for doing importing data into document DB as well as exporting data out as JSON. Included in that is geospatial data support. So it gives you support for doing actual geospatial based queries. So what's the distance or how many things are within a certain range, that sort of thing, which is great. Mm-hmm. Another bit of news is we added upsert support. So it used to be that you'd have to do basically check to see if an item exists in your document store. If it doesn't, insert it, otherwise update. Now you can just do one statement and do an upsert, and document DB will deal with making sure it does the right thing for you. We also integrated with Visual Studio's Cloud Explorer. So if you're familiar with Cloud Explorer, it's something you can use to navigate through the resources you have running in Azure. Well, now you're able to see your document DB instances as well as go into them and explore them, which is great. Mm-hmm. Increased query limits. So you can, in a single query, you've got an increased number of ands and ors and joins you can do, which is really great. And then a bunch of new regions were lit up for document DB. So it's kind of spreading where it's available to a lot more places within Azure.
Cool. And the CDN premium features, this is also new in December. So basically now we have two tiers of CDNs. You have standard and then premium tiers. And you have additional features like a rule engine that you can use in the premium tier. And we have features that has been long asked by our customers, such as purge. Right now you can trigger purge of your content from the portal, so you can purge your content if you don't want them. And we have additional regions like India, Australia, and South America. Actually, earlier this year we announced the partnership with Akamai. So basically, the Microsoft and Akamai are joining forces, so we can leverage the edge points from Akamai to deliver the CDN contents. So it's definitely a great enhancement to our CDN solution overall. So
even more CDN endpoints and instances out there in the wild.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Awesome. So this is a big one from just, I think, a week or two ago, Azure Power App. So this is kind of a new utility or a new capability with inside Azure and within Microsoft. And essentially, it allows you to quickly create business applications that connect different systems. And this could be stuff like Office 365, Dynamics, Salesforce, OneDrive, Facebook, etc., as well as, you know, other more businessy type systems you might think of, so stuff like SharePoint and SQL and Oracle and SAP, so more like data resources, really. But connect those systems into applications. You can share these apps with anyone, and they run on Android, iOS, and Windows. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a really easy, essentially, you know, more of a, you know, maybe a less developer where you have to be in a code view sort of thing, you can actually create these applications that connect all these systems together, and then you're able to share them out with people in your company or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Currently, this system is invite only, but you can sign up at powerapps.microsoft.com. Mm-hmm. There's some really great functionality here, and what's really great about this is if, you know, there is amazingly cool functionality you can get without having to do any coding at all, but you can take what you build with Power Apps and also go into code editing for it, so you can do even crazier, fancier stuff with that.
And I guess another aspect of that is that the Power Apps allows a business person to customize those applications without involving the developers.
Right, exactly right. And there's a lot you can do there as a business person building out those apps.
Yeah. So another Linux distro on Azure. So Azure as a common platform, we do love Windows and we love Linux as well.
Yep.
So Debian has been one of the most popular distributions out there. So now we have the built-in support on Azure. You can go to the Azure portal under the compute category. You can directly search for the image and create a new instance just as other Linux distributions. And also, we are also supporting the distribution on our on-premise offerings as well. So you have this parity between the cloud and your on-premise system. For instance, what listed here is supported by System Center Suite, supported by PowerShell DSC, SED Recovery, OMS, etc. So you have this really streamlined experience as you move across on-premise and on cloud using the image.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's actually it for our kind of our overview. That wasn't comprehensive. You know, we didn't cover everything that's happened in Azure in the past, you know, 3 to 4 months, but we kind of covered a lot of high points and a lot of interesting stuff. And a lot of the stuff that we talked about will point you to links down below in the show notes so you can get some more information.
Yeah. I think we covered about 18 items in the last past 30 minutes.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Which is a lot to cover. And if you like this type of show, let us know. We'll try to do this kind of recap every 3 months, maybe.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of happening all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, since we don't have a special guest today, we actually have the ability to say that you can follow us. And Hashi, what's your Twitter handle?
Do I do this?
You better if you.
What's my Twitter handle? I forgot. Okay, Hashi by 2010. I think that's right.
Sounds good. And you can follow me at Chris Reisner.
All right.
And make sure to follow us at Cloud Cover Show, and we'll see you next time.
All right.